Live from the American Gulf Coast, it's the Dave Nemo Show.
And it is a great pleasure to welcome Bridget Blitch to the program. A partner at Taylor & Associates as Attorneys at Law in Florida. And Bridget this morning is going to talk about how to protect your livelihood. And we're going to enter into the courtroom with a group called the Transportation Lawyers Association. They had their annual conference late last month in Santa Fe, New Mexico. And they talked about a lot of things of great interest to the industry, but a lot of things really drill right down to the driver, him or herself. So there are things you need to know about being represented when you're a specialized carrier, when you have cargo claims, if you are a broker or logistics providers, or if you're a driver and you want to know what their challenges are. Bridget's going to kind of tick off a few of those, but we'll also zero in on something called the CARMAC Amendment and how this can be a, sort of like a be-all, end-all piece of legislation that goes back a long time, longer than most of us, that's for sure. Although some of us are closer than others, but I won't mention any names. One of those names is not Bridget Blitch, though, and she's going to join us here in just a moment. When you're on the road, safety is everything. That's why Help Incorporated, proud provider of pre-pass, way station, bypass, and e-tolling, has invested $700 million into making roads safer nationwide. With pre-pass, you avoid congestion around way stations and reduce the need to merge in and out of highway traffic. And transponders are hands-free to help you stay focused. Keep our highways safe and bypass with pre-pass today. Offering 1 month of free service to try before you buy. So call 888-599-PASS and use promo code NEMO, N-E-M-O, or visit prepassnow.com/NEMO. That's 888-599-7277 or prepassnow.com/NEMO. Bridget Blitch will join us here in just a moment, but there is a tornado warning that is in effect now in Texas, north of Beaumont. This is that same, it's a renewal of that. It's going to be right over Boomer, Texas, up on US 96, pretty much right now. And the whole thing is moving up toward the northeast, be aware of that. And Bridget Blitch, good morning. I think the last time we were together, I kept interrupting with more and more bad weather. It's just been one heck of a spring.
It sure has. And good morning to you, Dave. Thank you so much for having me on this morning.
Well, thank you so much. And I don't want to embarrass you, but congratulations. That's quite an achievement to be a full partner there at Taylor & Associates.
Well, thank you, Dave. I appreciate it. It's an honor.
Well, let us move right into today's topic, because I only ticked off a few of the things that you kind of have on the agenda. And I said, well, if we don't get through all of these this morning, we can always do a part two later on, because it's important stuff. But you just came from the Transportation Lawyers Association annual conference out in Santa Fe.
Yes, I did. And so it's with pleasure that I have the opportunity to just introduce the Transportation Lawyers Association to our audience. It's an association that I hold dear to my heart. As I started as a student member about 10 years ago. But it is a great organization. They're an independent international bar association. And they advocate for members in all modes of transportation. And their goal is to make sure that all the members have the most up-to-date information on what's going on in the law and the industry. So each year, they hold an annual conference. This year, it was in Santa Fe. It was a week-long conference, and we talked about a lot of current issues. And so I just kind of want to just go through generally some of the topics that were discussed, because I think it's important for those that we represent to know that we're always educating ourselves and improving ourselves and looking at different issues. It is an association that has been around for 75 years, and I go down to the very first president was actually in 1937. So it's a great organization there to advocate for those in the industry.
Wow, fantastic. So you were there, and one of the first things on your list in terms of what was discussed, specialized carriers. What you need to know as an attorney about representing specialized carriers. What was your takeaway that you can kind of transform into something useful for our listeners?
Yeah, so this was a real interesting segment that we have a couple different speakers that had presented on this topic. The one that I wanted just to highlight was from a Landstar system through their counsel, Richard Clark. And he highlighted some interesting information about what it's like to orchestrate a superload. And states have different definitions of what superloads are, but for example, Massachusetts defines a superload for permit purposes as being greater than 130,000 pounds. New York, on the other hand, has a definition that it's a load of over 200,000 pounds. So we talked about and looked at some different examples of what are these superloads. One example was like a wing blade from a wind turbine. Very impressive piece of machinery there being transported. But it talked about, you know, what when you're planning these loads, whether you're the motor carrier or the driver, what kind of situations and what issues do you have to address? Now, this is a little bit of background. The Service Transportation Assistance Act of 1978-1982 established certain weight standards for the Dwight D. Eisenhower System Interstate and Defense Highways, and that was to ensure some uniformity with truck transportation. And so we do have, as our audience is aware, the interstate system that certainly trailers are generally allowed to operate with gross vehicle weight ratings of up to 80,000 pounds when properly registered. But what happens when you get above those limitations and you have these heavy specialized carriers that can weigh two or three times the federal maximums and may exceed, in fact, the length of 200 feet? So it's important, and one thing that we appreciated from taking away from Mr. Clark's presentation of, you know, what about permits and base plates, cargo securement regulations, operating restrictions. So some of the things that he talked about is thinking ahead for the carrier, having a route survey, and making sure that the carrier may need to hire an independent service or a pilot car to make sure that the route will fit over and under all the bridges and around corners and things like that. For drivers, they have to understand securing the load. So working with load limits of strapping and wire rope and things like that. So there's responsibilities that are going to fall on the carrier and on the driver. And I have to say, it's tremendous respect for all of our drivers and those that are doing these super loads, because it is quite a feat just from the pictures that were shared with us during the presentation of getting these loads. Sometimes the corner, the driver couldn't just take a normal corner. So if there was street signage, that might have to be moved. Or if there were electrical wires, sometimes those have to be moved. So it was a great education for us at the conference to have a little bit of insight of what it takes to be a heavy hauler, all the different operating restrictions that come into play. For example, it could be different states allow only superloads to operate during daylight. Others say only during nighttime. So obviously that's going to impact the length that it's going to time that it's going to take to get a shipment from destination to its destination. And parking, another big issue with these super loads. So all these things we have to think of in advance. Where are we going to put our driver that night or during that daytime when they have to stop? So parking spaces must be located on the permitted route to make sure that it's sufficient to accommodate the needs of the cargo. And that was very insightful for us and for those the drivers that may be looking into getting into that type of operation. So that was just one snippet of the topics that were talked about during the Transportation Lawyers Association conference. And one thing that I'll add is that, I mean, this is a very well-represented and association, and they had over 203 registrants at the conference. So we had, in addition to representatives there from Landstar, we had representatives from 33 states, Canada, South Korea, Mexico, and Germany.
We're going to take a break here. Before we do that, is there some news? Are there some upcoming events that our listeners might be interested in, or at least knowing about them?
Sure. So one thing I'm excited to share with our listeners is that we are going to be having the Transportation Law Institute in Norfolk, Virginia, and that's going to be on November 10th. And so that's going to be a one-day conference, and we're going to, again, share insight and ideas and also the latest trends in the industry at that time as well.
I want to remind everyone that the phones are open, and I didn't mention that earlier, and I should have, but Bridget's had about enough talking to me. She wants to talk to you. So if you have any questions about the legal issues, especially if you're in specialized haulage or are thinking about it, by all means, give us a call. But anything that has to do with trucks, trailers, and the law, Bridget will handle, and if not, she'll get back to us. 615-292-6366. That's the number to call. Bridget will be with us for the full hour, so you got plenty of time, but don't wait to call. Call now. 615-292-6366. Jamie Lynn will answer the phone and get you all squared away, and we'll be right back. There's a better way to keep in touch with the rest of the world when you're out in the middle of nowhere. WeBoost has created a cell phone signal booster that can increase your cell and data signals by up to 32 times. Made exclusively for pro drivers, the Drive 4GX OTR will help you ditch dead zones and dropped calls. WeBoost works with all carriers and cellular devices, and there are no recurring fees. Visit WeBoost.com/OTR today to hear what you've been missing.
Hello, I'm Barry Richards, Executive Vice President of TA and Petro and the new TA Truck Service Commercial Tire Network, the largest independent commercial tire dealer in the U.S. Buying tires for your tractor or trailer has never been easier. Just pick your price point, pick your brand. We carry all major brands like Goodyear, Continental, Yokohama, BF Goodrich, Roadmaster, Pirelli, and more. And pick your delivery or pickup location. Need them installed? No problem. Our highly skilled ASE certified technicians can install your new tires on or off-site, even roadside. TA Truck Service Commercial Tire Network. Top quality brands, a knowledgeable nationwide sales force, competitive pricing, and unmatched convenience. TA Truck Service, more bays, expertise, and solutions.
TA and Petro, full service means at your service.
TA and Petro, full service means at your service. Some restrictions may apply. See Truck Service Advisor or visit ta-petro.com for details.
Dave Nemo with you. Good morning again. Protecting your livelihood is what we're talking about with Bridget Blick, partner at Taylor & Associates, attorneys at law in Florida. And Bridget's going to walk through something that's very important. It's been around for a long time, but a lot of drivers are not up on it as well as they should be. And Bridget, you say that some drivers aren't even aware of the CARMAC amendment. I always think about Johnny Carson when I hear the CARMAC, you know. But at any rate, it goes back to what, 1935?
That's right. It was enacted by Congress in 1935. And it really is a staple of my practice, and I think that it's important at least to provide an introduction to what this law is, why it's important to drivers, why it's important to motor carriers, and really how it affects operations. And it was another, it's always one of those things that is talked about, in fact, at the annual conference, and there's a committee devoted to this as well as freight, that is freight claims. So let's talk about the CARMAC amendment. And the CARMAC amendment applies to motor carriers involved with transporting shipments in interstate commerce. So it was a way to create uniformity of claim handling when shipments are transported in interstate commerce, keeping in mind that interstate commerce shipments may mean shipments coming in from the port, even though the carrier only is, let's say, transporting the land leg of that shipment from, let's say, a port in Tampa to another location in Florida. And so the reason why I want to talk about the CARMAC amendment is because cargo claims are significant. It's significant to the motor carrier when it happens. I mean, we know that our trucking companies and owner-operators are running on very thin profit margins. So when these claims happen, it can really hurt the carrier and the owner-operator. And the driver, it can certainly affect their livelihood or perhaps even their freight pay when these cargo claims occur. So one of the things that the CARMAC amendment does is a form of strict liability. And what it says to the shipper is that you have to demonstrate that the goods were tendered to the motor carrier in good condition, that the goods arrived damaged, and then that actual damage to the product resulted. So what that means is, let's take the first element, that the goods were received in good condition. And oftentimes what I see is that there'll be a clean bill of lading. So there won't be any notation by the driver or anyone else notifying the shipper that the product has been damaged. Well, let's say that one of the packaging in the back of the trailer is damaged. Well, that packaging, by outward appearance, may not mean that the actual product itself is damaged, but it is always a best practice if the driver goes back and has the opportunity to see that the packaging has been damaged or from some visual cue has a concern that there might be a claim, then we want the driver to make sure to identify to the company, to the motor carrier, I have a concern here that there's product damage, or maybe if it's a food shipment, do they see ice on the product? Or what if it's an opportunity And Dave, you may run into this, where the driver says, I didn't have an opportunity to look in the back of the trailer. So, you know, what would you do in that instance?
I don't know what you would do.
So, the driver, if they don't have an opportunity to inspect, call the dispatcher. Is it one of these situations where the lanes typically says we allow the opportunity to inspect the product? And if they don't have the opportunity, can that dispatcher or can the driver get a hold of somebody at the shipper and say, I need to have the opportunity to review or look inside this container? Or make sure that there's some notation that the driver did not have the opportunity to inspect that shipment before it left the distribution center. So I don't know if any drivers have called in with that situation before and how they've handled that. So I wonder what your thoughts were on that particular issue. But it comes up because that's the burden is, well, how can we, the shipper is going to have to show that it was received in good condition, and they're going to push back and say, well, there's a clean bill of lading. So then that pushes the motor carrier to say, well, wait a minute, I didn't have the opportunity to inspect the product. So once it gets to destination, if the shipper now claims, the product was damaged, you know, what was the extent of the damage? Is it visible damage? Or was it something that only the shipper was able to identify once the product was actually opened? So documenting the arrival of the shipment is really important. And what happens when we get involved in these types of claims is making sure that we preserve all the information as soon as possible, which typically means that we're going to get the insurance company involved or we're going to get a third-party adjuster out there to start documenting the product, or in the case of a food shipment, getting the USDA out to the scene to take an inspection of the goods. So if, Dave, if you had a situation where the food product, let's say it's a food shipment, and you have ice crystals on the product, what do you think you as a driver would be the first thing that you would do?
Well, let's see. I think I'd take some photos if possible, and again, call dispatch, taking your lead from the last question. When in doubt.
There you go. Yeah, so take photographs, call dispatch, get instruction from your carrier as to how they want to handle the shipment. And then the other issue is, well, what if there's an opportunity to salvage? There's a duty to mitigate damages. And one of the issues that I come across is that product, is it salvageable? And a lot of times what I see in contracts is that the motor carrier either waives the right to salvage or waives the right to salvage credit. So for those companies out there that are getting these contracts, those are one of the very critical things to look at, because what if there was an opportunity for you to take, let's say, that shipment that we just received and some of it was salvageable? Was there an opportunity to get that credit back? And our insurance companies can help us through that process as well. So for a lot of owner-operators we see that have cargo policies, they may not necessarily think about getting their insurance company involved. But one of the concerns that I always have is if you wait until the claim has already been processed or the product has already been dumped, is the insurance company going to claim prejudice because they didn't have the opportunity to inspect the product?
We're going to take a break here. When we come back, we're going to go to the phones. Do have some lines open, though. Take advantage of the time right now to give us a call. Bridget Blitch is with us from Taylor & Associates, 615 615- 972-6366. And if you have any questions that you'd like to talk to an attorney about, you can talk to one right here.
Seconds till showtime.
Now, back to the Dave Nemo Show on SiriusXM's Road Dog Trucking Radio.
And thank you very much. Well, we're going to go straight to the phones on this half of Protect Your Livelihood with Bridget Blitch. Bridget is a partner at Taylor & Associates Attorneys at Law over in Florida. And we got, one, two lines open. So 615-292-6366. And Bridget, good morning again. And let's head to Missouri. Brian is with us there. Hey, Brian, good morning. Thanks for calling. And you're on with Bridget now.
Good morning, Mr. Nemo. Bridget, thank you for being on with us.
Brian, good morning. It's my pleasure.
My question to you all is, as a standing rule, I used to always sign my bills SLC at the end of my name, shipper, load, and county. If they did not allow us on the dock, we would also note CN, I'm trying to remember the acronym, I think it's shipper, or it's carrier not allowed on dock. Does that apply and can that protect the carrier?
Well, Brian, that's a great question that you presented, and what often is going to apply is what is the contract between the motor carrier and the shipper, because sometimes there may be provisions in that agreement that says that the carrier must actually notify the shipper if they don't have an opportunity to inspect or count the product. So one thing that's important, you know, to get from your dispatcher is there any specific or special handling instructions that I need to know about when I go pick up this shipment, such that if I just note on my bill of lading, which, by the way, I would do that as well, but if I need to know, is there a special procedure such that that's not going to be sufficient in this case because of the particular relationship we have with this customer, I want to make sure that I'm there and following their instructions. So that's always a best practice because each shipment may be different. And if it's, you know, the same lane, oftentimes we see that happen where there's special instructions that are given to the motor carrier. If your dispatcher doesn't volunteer that information, then I would get that information from them before you go to pick it up.
Bridget, thank you very much. And Brian, thank you very much. I have another tornado warning. This one just came out. It runs until 9:15, and it's in that same area in southeast Texas, southwest Louisiana. This is above Beaumont, Texas, up around that same Buna area up there on U.S. 96. The storm is moving to the east at 30 miles per hour, and we'll be over Devil's Pocket at around 8:45. That's another 6 minutes. Old Salem at around 8:50, and it'll be around Bancroft at about 9 o'clock. And radar has indicated rotation. That's why this is a tornado warning. Now, let's go back to our phone calls here. Bridget Blitch is with us, and our next caller is John, who is in Kentucky. John, I think John's got a pretty good question, Bridget. John, go ahead and lay it out for us.
Thank you for taking my call. My question is that when the company I work for hauls meat, we pick up sealed trailers that are loaded, the temperature set on the at their company. When I pick it up, I take it to another place to deliver it. The trailer's sealed when I back into the dock. You know, we have to break the seal and back in. Why am I responsible for anything that happens to that load, you know, unless I wreck or something like that? You know, any product in the trailer or anything else. I just don't understand that at all. I never have.
Mm-hmm. Right. And, you know, one of the things that we talked about in the last segment was the FSMA, which is the Food Safety Modernization Act, and it was enacted to really protect and provide operations for safely transporting food. And what I can say is that the CARMAC amendment itself applies to motor carriers. So, you know, obviously you or a driver in general is an arm of the motor carrier. When a cargo claim happens, what I see usually is it's the motor carrier that gets sued. What I'm always cautious of is, as a driver, wanting to make sure we protect your livelihood and that you're doing everything, you know, from a best practice perspective that you can, so that should some claim happen, you can go back either to your employer, or if you're an independent contractor, to the company that you're leased on to, and say, I followed exactly the instructions that were provided to me from dispatch, and you know, here they are, and so that way you're protecting, you know, your position as either a company driver, or if you're an independent contractor, you're following the customer requirements. So I have not seen situations where drivers individually have been named for a cargo loss. What I see is situations where a driver gets terminated, or an independent contractor agreement gets terminated because of a cargo loss.
Wow. So the stakes are high, huh, Bridget?
Well, they are. I mean, and that's going back to, you know, profit margins being so thin, that we want to make sure as drivers that we can push back and say, we've done everything in accordance with dispatch, in accordance with the instructions that were provided to us, or that was provided by our customer.
Well, John, thank you very much. That's an important question. Bridget, thank you, and we'll be right back. Bridget Blitch is with us. And 615-292-6366. Do have that line open. Oh, it's not open now. So hang what you got. Stay with what you got, and we'll get right to your calls, and we'll be right back.
The highway called when I was young. Told me lies of things to come. Fame and fortune lies ahead. What the billboard like to say. Shattered dreams, my mind is numb. My money's gone, stick out my thumb. My eyes are filled with bitter tears. Lord, I ain't been home in years. Got the highway 40 blues.
Sapp Brothers would like to thank Dave Nemo listeners for their continued support by rewarding double points on all diesel purchases and triple points for DEF dispensed at the fuel island. And if you're not already a Sapp Brothers Rewards member, it's simple to join. Just stop by any fuel desk to sign up. As always, you can use your reward points towards store, restaurant, and shop purchases. The best part is your points never expire. Come be our guest at Sapp Brothers, where we do the right thing because it's the right thing to do.
The mission of the St. Christopher Fund is to help professional drivers and their families who have financial needs due to medical problems. Assistance may be in the form of direct payment for medical services or prescription drugs, assistance with expenses while recovering, or negotiating price reductions with medical providers and hospitals. If you or someone you know is in need of help due to an illness, or perhaps if you would like to make a donation, go to davenemo.com and click on the St. Christopher Fund.
Don't forget I-74 in Indiana, eastbound side of mile marker 39. Two big trucks got into it, there's a possibility that that's a fatality, but we'll check that out. Indiana, I-74, mile marker 39, eastbound. They expect it to be closed until about noon. Bridget Blitch is with us, and Bridget, let's go up to Indiana. Ricochet is making his way across Indiana. Good morning.
Good morning. How you doing, Dave?
Hey, good. Thanks, man.
Good morning, Ricochet.
Hey, Dave. Good morning. I was kind of just wanting to make a statement about the dishonesty now that's in the shipping and receiving business as far as cargo claims. I mean, when a box or something has evident forklift damage to it, and then they try to charge the driver for it. I mean, that's kind of wrong. And you'd be surprised how often it does happen.
Well, that's an interesting point you bring up, because one of the defenses to the motor carrier is an act of the shipper. So if something mm-hmm. like that happens, then the motor carrier shouldn't be liable, and that's where we would raise an affirmative defense. That's the act of the shipper that damaged the product.
Well, I've actually took pictures, and see, that one of the favorite things of these lumber agencies, they'll go back in the back of the truck and say, oh, this cargo shifted every which way, and you've already got pictures showing it ain't, and they get to charge you an extra $50 because it's shifted and it ain't shifted. And motor carriers don't fight it because it's such a small plane. You understand what I'm saying?
I understand what you're saying.
Okay.
Right.
I mean, it's a lot of dishonesty as far as these lumber agencies are concerned, as far as loading and offloading a product.
Right. So, well, and that's why I think, you know, you're right to be proactive when something like that does happen, to preserve the information that you have right when it's available to you at the delivery, or if it's in a situation where it's at loading. And the other thing is that, you know, what I talk about with motor carrier companies and the question of, well, it's such a small claim, you know, do we report it? Well, you don't. Maybe there's other damages that are not necessarily evident at that time. So you know, at least preserve the option to pursue insurance rather than getting a declination of coverage down the line because you didn't report it. So that's an issue too.
Wow, Bridget, thank you very much. We're going to keep moving here and head over to North Carolina. And Old Pesty is with us on the line. And good morning to you, and welcome to the program.
I call myself Pesty Dave because it's me again. Mike. No, the reason being, again, I told you I taught truck driver schools, and I kind of like to take care of the newer drivers that don't know any better. Bridget, can you please give the disclaimer that, okay, for instance, a driver goes through all this in the state of California. Well, I heard Bridget saying this on the radio. She covered in the state of California. No, I believe she's an attorney in Florida. You see what I'm saying?
Oh, well,
not all,
you know,
states are the same. Yeah.
Yeah, and so what I'm talking about here is the Carmack Amendment, which is federal law. And so there are some exceptions that can be raised to the Carmack Amendment. For example, if it's not an interstate shipment, or if the parties decide that they're going to waive the Carmack Amendment and instead allow their claims to be handled by state law, in which case, then if you're in California, for example, then it may be the California laws apply in terms of whether it's a breach of contract claim or a negligence claim, or maybe is it a situation where it's not a regulated commodity, for example, is an exempt commodity, and therefore one can make the argument that it doesn't, that the Carmack doesn't apply. Unless, again, the parties say, we choose to have the Carmack Amendment apply to all of our shipments, regardless of whether they're exempt commodities or not. So you bring up an excellent point, and it's one of these situations when, well, we, as lawyers, we say, well, it depends. If the general rule that I'm just talking about here is the federal law of the Carmack Amendment. A great point.
Old Pesty, thank you very much. Bridget, one of the things that we didn't get to specifically, you kind of alluded to the five exceptions to the Carmack Amendment. A couple of them are kind of mysterious in terms of what they mean. First one, though, there's no mystery here. There's an exception on the Carmack Amendment for an act of God, tornado, flood, or a heart attack or something like that.
Right. So, you know, that can be raised, and, you know, the question is it a truly extraordinary or unforeseen natural occurrence? And that was actually one of the issues that we talked about at the annual conference is, let's say you have a hurricane coming. Certainly one would argue that that's an act of God. But was there enough warning to this hurricane, that there could have been preparation done to protect the cargo? Or was it some situation where one could argue that the intensity of the hurricane or its particular location was not predicted? So you get into questions of, was it foreseeable and truly extraordinary? You could make the same question about, what if a trailer gets blown over in the wind? Was there a weather prediction for wind in that area such that the motor carrier, the driver, should have been aware of the weather conditions?
Indeed. So an act of God, basically, usually now, obviously, except for, sudden accidents, but usually the big storm systems, whether it be hurricanes or tornadoes, as we have this morning, we have some warning to some degree, and in some cases, days of warnings with hurricanes. So our reaction to that pending act of God is extremely important. But number two on this list is one of those that's a little bit mysterious. What is public enemy?
Right. So that's looking at, another degree of when there's a loss caused by a foreign military force. So, very, I would say, hopefully unlikely that we would see some type of foreign military force in the United States that would seize a commodity or a cargo. But that is on the list.
Wow, from 19. So that's how folks were thinking back in 1935. I wonder if we would have put that in here today. I don't know.
Yeah, I have not seen it used. So, but it is out there and still the law. Maybe the act, one might argue it as an act of terrorism might qualify.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Understood. Yeah. Yeah. Sort of just tweaked a little bit, I guess you might say, to reflect the current situation. What are some of the other exceptions that are pretty interesting? Well, they're all pretty interesting.
Yeah. So the other ones are acts of public authority. And this one we have encountered where the government intervenes and takes possession of the commodity. An act of the shipper, like we talked about earlier, or loss or damage by inherent vice or nature of the goods. So that one, is it such a highly sensitive commodity that by itself that it provides a defense, and there's nothing that the motor carrier could have done differently to prevent the damage to the product.
Ah, gotcha. And then there's one more, the inherent vice or nature of the goods transported. That kind of sounds like, I think I know what that means, but I'm not sure.
Yeah. So one of the case examples that we had at the conference here was the Indiana Jones movie where they were transporting the tabernacle. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the film, you may recall where the tabernacle, Indiana Jones says, "Don't look into the tabernacle." And so that was, is that an inherent nature of the goods defense? Kind of like just a fun example, but something where it's the nature of the product itself that is responsible for the damage.
Wow, that is a lot of information, a lot of material. I usually wind up missing a few things along the way, and as you say, there was quite a bit to discuss and quite a bit of knowledge that you took away from the meeting in Santa Fe of the Transportation Lawyers Association at the annual conference. Did I miss something that you're saying, man, I can't believe he's not asking me about this. What did I miss here?
Well, no, I appreciate that, Dave. And the only other item here that I had on my agenda here that I'll share, given our time, was that I mentioned that we do have committee meetings. And one of those committee meetings that I actually co-chair is the Motor Carrier Committee.
Right.
Along with my partner, Catherine Garber. We were very honored to have two presenters, and one of them I think is Henry Seaton.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, I think he mentioned, he says hello, and so he, along with fellow Mark Andrews, another attorney of Strasburger Price, presented an update to us, and this is in rules affecting the motor carrier industry. So we talked about the electronic logging device rule being a final rule. And I know that's a question that comes up is, well, is there any possibility maybe now that that rule might get overturned? The same thing with the Drug and Alcohol Clearinghouse rule, which you've talked about before. So these rules are final, and that means that unless there is some administrative action where there's a notice and opportunity to contest these rules are final and are going into place. So we talked about that. Then we talked about other things that you've also shared on your program, things that are either suspended or postponed, not final, like the speed limiter rule. Also, we talked about the safety fitness determination and the withdrawal of that rule, along with, as you know, the letter that came from the 62 trade associations. So we shared that with our group. We also talked about the scheduled phase-in of the URS. So now that registration is only for new registrants where they use the Wizard program, you may be aware of, existing carriers are still going to use their traditional forms. So we have a lot of companies or owner-operators that want to come to us and get registered. So those are questions that we talked about. Do you use your OP-1 application, or are we using the Wizard application now?
Wow. Okay. Got it. I think that'll hold us for a while. Bridget, as always, thank you so much. And we'll see you in June.
Oh, wow. Sounds great, Dave. Looking forward to it as always.
As are we, Bridget. Thank you so much. Bridget Blitch, and congratulations again. She is a new partner at Taylor & Associates Attorneys at Law there in Florida. And she joins us each month, first Wednesday of each month. And we call our series with Bridget, Protecting Your Livelihood. Okay, well, let's take a quick break here. Be right back.
Attention carriers and owner-operators. Our friends at Truckers Against Trafficking, along with Inland Kenworth, will be auctioning a tractor. All proceeds will go to TAT's efforts to end forced labor and commercial sex slavery. And it's not your everyday truck. It's the Everyday Heroes truck, with a distinctive paint scheme and TAT signage to show your support. The auction for the Kenworth T680 takes place June 20th at Ritchie Brothers Auction in Phoenix, Arizona. Can't make it? Bid online. For photos of the truck, auction details, and to find out how you can be an everyday hero for human trafficking victims, visit truckersagainsttrafficking.org. Tomorrow on The Tim Ridley Show, it's Safety Tip Thursday and Open Phones Open Forum. Plus at 6:30 a.m. Eastern, it's Scott Grunerth with OIDA and Greg McDermott with Phoenix Sleep Solutions. The Tim Ridley Show, weekday mornings from 5 to 7 Eastern, right here on the Road Dog.
Riding hard.
We are riding hard towards this afternoon, that's for sure. And this afternoon on Road Dog Live with KC Phillips, it's Road Dog Game Day. That's right. RDGD coming up today. It's the first Wednesday of the month. That means Road Dog Game Day. To get things started, KC will host the Chevron Dello Trivia Challenge and get you registered for some great gifts. And after that, plan for bragging rights in the Trivia Challenge. And don't forget the coveted handicapped parking sticker in the Road Dog parking lot. out that we call our phone system. So if you're the highest scoring participant in this month's game day, you get first in line when you call in. You won't have to wait to get on the air for a whole month.